case be taken under advisement. Proceed with the next case, United States versus TD or something like that.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The defendant appellant is challenging the court's sentence at the high end of the guideline range as being in violation of the reasonable standard implemented by the United States Supreme Court in its Booker decision. And in support of that argument, we feel that Judge Miller, the district court judge, gave undue influence and undue weight to three factors which resulted in this sentence being unreasonable. First of all, the court found that because Mr. Titi was charged with more than one criminal offense in various state counties, that his denial that he was under information or indictment was outside of the heartland. We feel that this finding is plainly unreasonable, and that the judge making it clearly erred. Secondly,
well, could I stop there, though? I mean, I remember that Judge Miller did use that terminology, but back in the pre-Booker days, if you were talking about outside the heartland, you were talking about departures, really. Whereas here, he's raising I don't think the facts are disputed that all these other charges were out there. He's explaining why he's chosen a sentence at the high end of a properly calculated guidelines range. And there, at least traditionally, judges had a great deal of discretion to take into account whatever factors they thought were important. And of course, under this sort of rebuttable presumption of reasonableness that we've established, we'd have to show why the number of pending charges didn't somehow make this a more culpable act.
I don't really see how, whether there was one charge or three charges or four charges in three counties, makes this more serious. He lied in an application to get a gun, and I think that standing alone, is sufficient. And whether it was a bigger lie than other lies or other possible lies doesn't make him any more culpable or increase the level of dangerousness.
Well, that's what I was going to say, kind of focusing on sort of deserving of punishment in a sense, just as we give higher punishments to recidivists with higher criminal histories, or we give higher punishments to people that we lower punishments for people who accept responsibility, who seem to indicate that they are going to try to mend their ways. There's an element of judgment here, I think.
Yes, and I guess I am asking this court to substitute its judgment for the decisions reached by Judge Miller.
You know, if when sentencing a defendant, a judge can consider even charges of which a defendant has been acquitted, why couldn't Judge Miller consider the pending state charges? I mean, it just...
Oh, I think he can, Your Honor. Clearly, I think he can. I think he gave undue weight, which is one of the factors set forth in the Cosby decision, to those charges under these circumstances, that those charges remain viable, and Mr. T. presumably, no effort had been made by the prosecutors in the various counties to dismiss those charges, as had been the case in the Miller case. So I think that the judges need to take into account those charges was unwarranted, and therefore his reliance on those charges, he certainly could consider them, but we think his reliance in this case was an undue reliance and resulted in an unreasonable sentence.
The man is, I mean, the judge is dealing with a man who's been banned from has violated restraining orders hundreds of times.
I guess
running around some other county Wisconsin.
My history, I guess, doesn't make that fact that he was banned from the county significant. I spent a lot of my life practicing law in small counties in north central Indiana, and that was a common punishment in those days. The judges would ban you from the county, or they would order the sheriff to take the defendant to the county line or to a neighboring town and drop him off. That's not as unusual as maybe people who have practiced in Cook County or in the larger counties where the judges aren't as familiar with the defendants, sometimes all too familiar with the defendants.
But the fact is, Judge Miller had to pick if he was going to stick with the guidelines range itself, something between 10 and 16 months, right? So he picks 16.
Yes.
And he gives these various reasons, the particular circumstances of this man's behavior up to that time, and circumstances which a reasonable person might think might have underlay the fact that he was trying to buy this gun illegally to begin with. You know, we don't know. But the judge is drawing some inferences. And so he picks 16 months. And it's within the range. He doesn't pick 14 months or 13. You know, presumably he could have picked something in the middle of the range. But it's very hard for me to see how any choice in a tight little range like that, based on the facts for explained reasons, would be an unreasonable choice.
I hearken back to the Johnson decision, which Your Honor just rendered, in which I was the appellate counsel for, and that they followed the structure of the guidelines. He gave reasons, and I don't know if there's a magic in just giving reasons. If the reasons are erroneous or the reasons are a result of giving great weight to a particular factor, or reasons result from the particular personal bias of the judge, or the reasons...
There's no reason to think that there was anything factually erroneous about the underlying points Judge Miller makes here, or that he was biased in any way.
No, I'm not.
You're giving kind of examples of cases where we might, in fact, think that there was a problem. But why is this one of them?
I just think that the reasons that the judge chose and his explanations for those reasons, specifically the one that he needs to protect the public, and I understand this falls under the fairly debatable rule, but he had demonstrated for a number of months after his bond had been revoked and he'd been in prison for 87 days or something, that he could conform his conduct to the dictates of law, as he had for most of, all but 2 months of the 45 previous years of his life. I think that finding is not supported by the evidence, though we clearly acknowledge and have acknowledged that his conduct during those 2 months was reprehensible. But it was nonviolent conduct. It was a harassing, annoying. It was in violation of a court order. And I'm not trying to minimize that. That's a significant problem that the judges encounter. To base, I understand.
Was there any consideration? Was there any consideration given to the fact that he was attempting to get a gun, and that this kind of stalking behavior obviously, it maybe if he discontinued it, that's one thing, but that maybe the longer he's in prison, he's better apt to get over this, whatever it is he had with this woman that went and married somebody else.
I'm sure that's a possibility. The judge raised that in denying our request for a sporting purposes departure, saying that he wasn't convinced that that was the only reason for which he purchased the gun, but he did live in a rural area. He was attempting to buy a .22 caliber rifle and not a .357 or a .38 caliber semi-automatic handgun that would certainly be much more suitable if you were intending to harm someone. And he did raise livestock, and he was his livestock was threatened by the varmints of various kinds, and he was permitted by Indiana law to use that firearm to kill those varmints, and so. Looking at the totality of the circumstances and the facts and the facts of his life, this was very consistent with somebody who lived in a rural area and raised chickens and geese and other livestock.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Schmidt.
This was a relatively modest 16-month sentence for a firearms violation. As your honors have pointed out, it was within the guideline range, and this court's precedents from this past summer and spring create a presumption of reasonableness. There is nothing in this record to overcome that presumption of reasonableness. To the contrary, the record below shows that not only was this a reasonable sentence, at least considered from the defendant's perspective, but that a longer sentence of imprisonment may well have been justified. Here's what this defendant did in the 7 months leading up to his federal crime. In early November of 2003, he started harassing and stalking his ex-girlfriend and her husband, Mr. Baker. He then became subject to a restraining order in the court. Then in the following 2 months, he violated that restraining order hundreds of times, pounding on their windows, driving by their residence, calling his ex-girlfriend. He was caught in the vicinity of his ex-girlfriend and her husband with a .22 rifle, ammunition, a slingshot, and steel shot in his car. That .22 was a stolen firearm. When the police took that away from him, he was then charged with stalking, intimidation, invasion of privacy, and receiving stolen property. But that was only in one county. He was facing charges in a couple of other Indiana counties. He was then placed on bond, and what did he do when he was placed on bond and had pretrial release conditions? He began to stalk and intimidate his victims again. As a result of that, his bond was revoked, and he was sent to prison. Then what did he do within a very short time of getting out from that 60-day time in jail? He went off and attempted to purchase a firearm illegally, lying not once but multiple times on the ATF form 4473, denying he was under a restraining order, denying that he was under felony information, not just in one county, but three counties. This person was very dangerous. And this is not ancient history. This was the 7 months leading up to the commission of his federal offense. He was psychologically unstable. A person who violates a court restraining order, who violates his own pretrial release conditions hundreds of times, is not psychologically stable. The record contains a stipulation that he was a controlled substance abuser. He posed a clear risk to persons in the community, most specifically the victims he had been harassing, stalking, and intimidating. Judge Miller said explicitly, Defendant Teedy posed a definite risk and threat to people in his community, and then he attempted to acquire a firearm. Given that track record, and then illegally trying to acquire a firearm, this was a dangerous defendant. The government's submission is that actually a much longer sentence may well have been justified. But here, a sentence within the guideline range was absolutely correct. Thank you.
All right, thanks very much. This case will be taken under advisement. I'll ask you, were you court appointed?
I was, Your Honor, but I'm a full-time federal defender.
Okay. I just want to check. Thanks anyway.